The following podcast is brought to you by the new AT&T.
Meredith is visited by ghosts of surgery's past, Christina partakes in some retail therapy, and Mark gives up man-whoring, for now. We have commentary on all that and more in today's official Grey's Anatomy podcast, hosted by ABC.com. Well, Meredith Grey lives, but on the other hand, her mother passes on. For the implications of this and other twists of fate at Seattle Grace, we're joined by executive producers Shonda Rhimes and Betsy Beers. And though the show will be taking a bit of a breather, they'll have a few tidbits of information on what to expect in our next episode back, Scars and Souvenirs. That episode airs Thursday, March 15th from 9 to 10 p.m. on ABC and is available the next day at ABC.com. Here now are Shonda and Betsy.
Hi, I'm Betsy Beers.
And I'm Shonda Rhimes.
And this is Grey's Anatomy.
So, God.
Doesn't it strike you as just the dumbest thing ever?
That, cheesy.
Yeah, cheesy kind of. But, you know, it's our cheese.
Yes.
It's cheesy.
It's homemade cheese.
It's homemade cheese. It comes with the territory. So we're actually, like, incredibly excited to do this podcast about this episode because I think, from my perspective, this is an episode that I'm most anxious to hear and to sort of get a sense as to how you guys out there responded.
Because we've definitely gotten a lot of responses from the first two parts of the three-parter.
Yeah.
And there have been articles written about it and lots of people with lots of opinions. So it was interesting for us to put the third part out there and see what you guys think.
And I just, for my part, I just always... I think this is one of those episodes that from the first time I saw it, I saw a longer cut than what ended up airing initially, but I pretty much was crying from the middle of the episode on.
Betsy's a big crybaby.
I was a big old baby.
She's often sobbing.
Little tougher than that. Yeah, sometimes I just sob for the hell of it. I just sob in my spare time.
The least crying person ever, which is what's great when
I don't cry very much, but this just really screwed me up. I thought this episode just really... It really, really got me. And it's incredibly emotional. It's an amazing journey for Meredith.
Yeah, I mean, I really felt like Meredith had been coming to this point for a long time. The idea that Meredith is slightly suicidal was something that I've been putting forth for a long time. Mm-hmm. There's something fairly depressed about her. And the idea that she would... finally get the guy and get what she wants, but not really be able to feel the happily ever after portion of it was interesting to me. Coupled with all that's been going on with her mother and Ellis's lucid day and the things that Ellis said to her, all of it was really important to me. And in season two for you guys, Derek says to Meredith, "You were like coming up for fresh air. I was drowning and you saved me." And so the idea of letting Meredith drown and having Derek save her was part of their arc as a couple to me, and felt fairly important.
Absolutely, and also just sort of the idea that Derek saves her, but Meredith has to save herself.
And the reality that Derek can't ever be her knight in shining whatever, because Meredith really does have to save herself, was important.
And one of my favorite things of all time, which is, I had intimacy issues. Do you know how stupid that seems?
Yes.
Which... certainly for me, it gave me perspective, I think, about all of our lives, which is those are the sorts of things that you do kind of obsess about. And she had to go through this sort of like Wizard of Oz journey, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I do think that there's something, I mean, for me, it was very Greek tragedy, go down to Hades kind of thing. But yeah, it's very Wizard of Oz journey to realize that everything that she wanted, she already had.
And then it's just a matter of appreciating that and acknowledging what it is. But to watch and also get to encounter certainly is part of this. I mean, I think, first of all, just the whole concept that we could go into this netherworld, this death world, and then we get to encounter and learn something from our favorite patients, which was... Well,
yeah, and one of the things I love about Grey's that for me has been fun since, you know, we started the show, is that there's no template for a typical episode of Grey's Anatomy. We can do... a bomb the body cavity episode, or Bonnie and Tom trapped in the pool.
Absolutely, yeah.
Or we can do an incredibly light episode like Games People Play, where Meredith is knitting and
doesn't want to have sex. And she's abstaining.
Yeah, I mean, there's no template for the show. So to be able to do this episode, it didn't feel odd to me at all that we were going to do this episode. I've been talking about doing an episode
yep.
with all the dead people in the hospital. And for a while, I really wanted to do an episode with just the dead people in the hospital for a long time.
Which would have been cool, too, in its way.
And but, I wanted to literally bring back every single patient who had ever died.
And the truth is, actually, when we started talking about this episode, you did kind of want to bring back every single patient.
Yeah, we made a big list of all the patients who had died. And
by the way,
wanted to bring
there are a lot of them.
There are we kill a lot of people here at Grace.
We do, so it's maybe not a... I worry about Seattle Grace sometimes yeah. in my spare time, but especially
die.
If you're a relative.
People die.
But it's it was like there was a long list. And
there was a long list, and we really narrowed it down to what I felt were, when you ask people what patients they remember, these four patients plus Doc seem to be the four people who died plus the dog that people really remember. People can always tell you about Ellis's mom's scrub nurse, Liz Fallon. People can always tell you about Bonnie. Everybody remembers Bonnie. Everybody remembers Dylan. And you'd have to be, frankly, in a coma not to remember Denny. So I felt like those were the really pivotal people. And for Meredith, they were pivotal. It was interesting. A lot of people said, why is Denny there? Meredith didn't have a relationship with Denny, but she did because Denny loves Izzy. And basically, she and Denny, Meredith and Denny, had these interesting moments together. And to me, it was about sort of him shepherding her through this thing that he knows that she's going through, which was his way of sort of helping Izzy.
And staying connected.
And,
I mean, another patient actually who came up a few times but really wasn't, I mean, obviously George's dad has just died too.
I wasn't ready for George to see George's dad. I mean, I felt like George's dad had died so recently, it felt oddly disrespectful to the memory of Mr. O'Malley.
I agree with that, and I also sort of feel like because this is, at one point, Denny says, you know, this is your afterlife, not mine. Because it's Meredith's afterlife, too, I feel like the patients that we chose, were really, really intrinsic and seminal for Meredith and Meredith's growth, which
yes.
is why they're there and why there's a big point, but also why George's dad, although he had a massive effect on everybody, Meredith, in a weird way, was the least directly connected.
She was the least directly connected to the whole thing.
So that all kind of made a huge amount of sense to me, too.
Yeah.
And then there's this whole amazing idea of her relationship with her mother coming full circle.
Finally,
in this way, in this space. And
I love that Ellis was in her scrubs and that sort of in death she was a doctor. And there's that moment when the two of them, you know, I've always said I wanted the moment where she sees her mother in this place and realizes that her mother is dead, but also that moment where they pass each other in the hallway
mm-hmm.
was really important to me. And having Ellis say to her, you are, you know, far from ordinary, was the one thing that Meredith needed to hear, frankly.
And pretty much takes care of the relationship in terms of, you know, what was left hanging in the hideous, that last Ellis's lucid day where so much was said and so much seemed to be connected to what was provoking Meredith in the beginning of this three-parter in the bathtub.
And also Meredith says to her mother at the end of Ellis's lucid day, after her mother's no longer lucid, I'm hoping that, you know, in 5 years they find a cure and you can see that I'm not remotely ordinary and it's too late. So for me, it was sort of a way of bringing that character full circle. Plus, Ellis Gray, as played by Kate Burton, is done beautifully.
Just
Kate Burton's amazing. And after Ellis has been lucid for a day, and we've seen Ellis as Ellis is, there's not many more places we can take her. But it was really wonderful to do this, and Kate was really great about the whole thing.
You know, and connected with that was the whole kind of idea that in order to, I mean, in the most sort of mystical sense, in order to get back into her body, Meredith has to admit the truth. She
mm-hmm.
has to not lie about how she was really, 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 really feeling, which is that she was giving up.
Yeah.
And that it wasn't so much about committing suicide or being suicidal.
It's, no, it's just,
giving up. It's
just
that
she let go.
Exactly.
For a moment. And for Meredith, I do think the struggle has been, what's the point? You know, like that's
where's the meaning in this?
Where's the meaning in all this? That's what she's a character searching for. And that moment when she admits it is a wonderful moment. I mean, I know a lot of people have been like, I've read on the blogs, people saying like, Meredith can swim. Like, why isn't she swimming? And I'm like, that's sort of the point.
That's what Derek says.
Yeah.
Derek says, Meredith's she's a good swimmer. It's, the point isn't that. The point is in what particular circumstance for the second you give up. Because life is about not giving up.
Exactly.
To a large degree. And also, you know, sentimentally to me, this episode is so much, it's so much about obviously Derek and Meredith and Derek and Meredith's relationship, and how when Denny says, and here comes the big one, so listen, you know, he would never be this guy if you die. As much and more so for me, too, it's Christina, because this is where we actually find out what happened to Christina, which feeds Christina.
What I think is really interesting to me is that this episode is not an episode that is about the love story between Meredith and Derek. It's a love story between Meredith and Christina,
exactly.
These two best friends, more so than anything else.
And it's also where we do get, we get so much insight into Christina and who she is.
And who she is.
Never ever having been told directly. But it reflects back to the Dead Dad Club, which all of a sudden seems absolutely different when you find out how her father died, mm-hmm. and under what circumstances, and how that sort of fuels it. And also why she handled the Burke situation the way she handled
it. She did.
And what incredible bravery and sort of friendship and emotional solidity after wandering through a 99-cent store and buying tiny chairs.
I love that so much. That was Marty Noxon's idea, and it's one of my favorites.
She just, the whole kind of concept of what do you do when you go to Bliss Out? You go shopping. And you go shopping where you can shop at that moment.
Right, wherever there's something sort of available. But I also think as much as it is this wonderful story about Meredith and Christina, there's something here that's left open-ended, which is Derek.
Absolutely.
I feel like he faces his worst fear, which is losing Meredith. And he realizes that it's his worst fear. And he also realizes that from now on, it's possible that his worst fear could come true at any time.
I think that's so true.
It's not over for them. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That issue is not over for them. And I think that there's something really, really interesting in that.
Well, it's almost like Derek is in... He spends a lot of his time being in denial of the darkness.
Yes.
And he's, I'm your knight in shining whatever, and I'm perky, and I'm going to deal with all this stuff, and I'm strong, and I'm this guy, but there's
he's
this...
He's a guy with a dark side.
And he's a guy with a dark side. And this episode, and the episode before it, is so much about coming smack front and kind of confronting that part of yourself, which in a weird way, with Meredith almost dying, she passes along to him.
Yes.
Because he goes to Ellis and has...
He has this freak out with Ellis, which I never felt like, you know, I screened for my sister before the rest of America saw it, because I often screen things for my sister, Dolores, before the rest of America sees it, because she gives me a real reaction. She stopped talking to me after Ellis died. But she was really, angry at Derek for yelling at Ellis. I like to think that Derek's yelling at Ellis, if you watch, there's one moment after he walks out of the room where Ellis looks like she heard him. Derek's yelling at Ellis is what made it possible for Ellis to give Meredith this sort of gift of telling her that
totally,
she's far from ordinary.
Totally agree. It's totally connected.
It's totally connected. And that doesn't mean that Derek killed Meredith's mommy. It just means that all of these events are completely connected in a really interesting way.
Well, yeah, and let's all remember Meredith's mommy had a heart problem.
Yes.
Okay, so just to bring this back to before all this fairy stuff started.
Meredith's mommy had a heart problem and Burke was downstairs saving Meredith's life.
And one other thing, too, because a couple of people have asked
me this.
There's
only one heart surgery.
Exactly. I was just about to say, one thing that I know a couple of my friends have called and they've said, okay, so I get Meredith's a really important patient, but every doctor at Seattle Grace is in this room with her. And in fact, Seattle Grace is filled with doctors.
Seattle Grace is a very large hospital. These are not the only doctors in the hospital. They're just the only doctors we care about.
And that we could fit in a show.
Yeah.
Because frankly, if we crammed 12. Too many more doctors into the show, there'd be doctors... In all your commercial breaks, too, because there would be so many doctors.
There'd be so many doctors.
Which I don't think would be that.
Everybody would just get one line every episode. And plus, I think there's something really interesting in Richard's role and his determination to bring Meredith back. The episode in which Ellis had her lucid day and Richard sort of promises to take care of Meredith was really pivotal. For me, not just for the fact that he made this promise to her, but he creates for Ellis in that moment a whole picture of what their life would have been like had they been together. And in that picture, Meredith was somebody that he was taking responsibility for as basically a parent. I mean, he says Meredith would have needed a brother and sister. And you suddenly get this idea that Meredith would have grown up in a completely different environment with a happy, happy family. And Richard is sort of her stepfather. And I think that he feels like that to her, towards her, and feels very protective. And to lose her would have been to betray sort of everything that he's ever promised to Ellis. And so I really, really loved watching him fight to save Meredith's life.
He also, you know, has just lost his wife. His wife has left him. And in a weird way, the semblance of family that he has left, indirectly, is Meredith. And even though she's not directly family, mm-hmm. he still feels, I think, that obligation on some weird level.
Yeah.
The other thing that I'm really, really enjoying watching, and I just love, is that Alex is developing this relationship with our Jane Doe.
That's because Alex is delicious.
Can I, Alex, by the way? Alex is phenomenal. Alex, last episode, you realize you could see how different things were hitting Alex and mm-hmm. the enormity of what had occurred. And I really love, the great thing is watching Alex grow, you're actively watching Alex grow and change.
It's really interesting to watch Alex.
So much is happening through
this. And to watch the bond that he feels with this woman who essentially sort of has the face of, I don't know what to call that face, but she's got, you know, a very elephant man kind of face happening there. And clearly feels alone and terrified and has no memory of who she is. And Alex, I love that he gives her that little gift of all the details he knows about her medically, which is very
cool. Is really lovely. And you think that Alex is always a guy who has portrayed himself as being interested in the more superficial aspects of femalehood. But
yes.
That he's strangely
He's only
enough,
been more interested in this, the superficial aspects.
But it's actually, he's the only person somehow or another who can communicate with this woman who's so damaged and we have no idea what she looks like.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow or another, he's the guy who sees beyond it and from the beginning doesn't even notice it.
Exactly.
There's this great moment where she says, he walks in and he's obviously distraught. And she says, am I clearly referring to her own condition? Like, am I going to die? And is this ever going to be better? And it was like, no, I'm actually worried about my friend. It didn't even occur to him.
Yeah.
You know, in this one moment that he doesn't see it. And I think that's one of the beautiful things about Alex is at this point, he doesn't see it. He just hears her and wants to understand who she is and help her figure out who she is, which I think is really cool.
I think so. There's also Mark and his decision to give up man whoring for 60 days.
I'm going to be curious to see how that goes.
I'm going to be curious to see how that goes too.
You know, I'm actually going to be curious to see if Addison can give up man whoring.
I'm going to be curious to see if Addison can give up man whoring. I'm also going to be curious to see Mark struggle with giving up man whoring.
Yeah, that I think there'll be a struggle. My prediction is there would be a struggle with Mark giving up man whoring.
Yes.
Although he might be relieved not to have to hear the word man whore.
Yes, because on a regular basis. We refer to him as man whore all the time.
Exactly. So that might be, we'll give him a little man whore vacation.
But I also thought it just didn't, you understand where Addison's coming from, why she would give Mark a chance in this moment. You know, she says, Derek never felt that way about me, and Mark says, I did. She desperately wants to believe that that's true. She needs to believe that that's true.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I want to take a little turn here and just talk about the man witch that is Denny and Dylan.
Okay, let's have a moment of man witch.
Yeah.
Just a moment of respect for the man witch. Because actually the fact that we've talked all this time and we haven't talked about the man witch
is pretty shocking. And
kind of
I'm actually impressed with our maturity.
We turned over a new leaf after Valentine's Day and President's Day here at Grey's Anatomy, and we decided for 10 milliseconds we'd be mature. But it's over now.
It's over now.
What a man witch, huh? I mean,
first of all, they have to be two of the best-looking men ever seen in real life standing near me.
Yeah, there's that.
You know, and we have Patrick Dempsey around here, so that's not, you know, talking lightly.
So that's just a...
Second of all, they're two of the nicest guys in the world.
Yeah, they're pretty nice.
Really, Kyle Chandler and Jeffrey Dean Morgan are two of the nicest guys in the world, perfectly happy to show up here and do their thing. But they also got along fabulously.
Yeah, they did.
They had this great, like, kind of chemistry that made you kind of want to see the Denny and Dylan show. Like, let's just watch these two dead guys go around and cure people.
We thought, I wonder if there's a thing that we could just do the Denny and Dylan in dead show.
Yeah, Denny, Dylan,
the triple dead, D's.
The triple D's.
Dead Denny and Dylan, the man witch.
Yes. But they are, you know, why are all the guys named with D's? What's
I don't,
that with
I
me?
Don't, I don't know. What's
I don't really know what that means, people.
You gotta think about that. That's probably not anything except D's. Sound good or something, but
really hot names start with D.
Apparently, but that was really a pleasure and a joy, and I myself, of course, really enjoyed reconnecting with Doc as played by Chopper.
Yeah, another D.
Another D.
See?
You know, I can't
I'm
say,
trying to tell you.
It's starting to get a little creepy.
But there's something really wonderful about having them there, and there was something really wonderful about watching Denny sort of very patiently push Meredith through this experience. In a way that was wonderful. I mean, Dylan sort of approached it from a very bomb squad perspective.
He did.
There's an urgency. We've got to do something. But Denny approached it the way Denny approaches things, which is very slow and steady, and we're going to get you there, and we're going to make sure this happens. And that was wonderful.
He also, Denny has a real comprehension of who Meredith is. Dylan didn't know her as long.
Dylan didn't know her at all, really.
And Dylan's entire point is he did his job. Now let's do the job. We got to do the job.
Yeah.
It's the equivalent of actually detonating a bomb or not detonating the bomb.
Exactly.
Is we got to get her out in time And Danny realizes there's a risk.
Yeah, I love that Dylan feels like he was successful. Like that really, even though he blew up, he was successful because he saved these other people's lives. He saved Meredith's life. And the importance of sort of, I saved your life, now you basically you're giving up, was really interesting to me.
And look, that you sort of get a feeling that Ellis the scrub nurse, Liz Fallon, is cool. She's cool. She's fine. She's at peace.
Yeah, she's just waiting.
Bonnie and Denny are going through some major crap, you know?
Because Bonnie and Denny were madly in love when they died, and they're both sort of stuck where they are.
Exactly, and that really brings us to, I think, one of my favorite moments in the history of this entire friggin' show, which is...
The very last moment?
The very last moment of that show.
I admit to writing the entire episode for that moment, because that is why I wrote the entire episode, because I really wanted that moment. I mean, not that all this other deeper meaning stuff, whatever. The moment where Denny and Izzy meet in the hospital and are staying in the same place at the same time is one of my most favorite moments of the show, because I think there's something really beautiful about it. And I kept sort of going back to the idea that, yeah, I want closure for Denny and Dylan. I mean, for Denny and Izzy, but I really wanted closure for Denny in a way. And now you feel like, you know, Denny's walking off into the light. He's going to be okay. It's all right that we, you know, he stole a heart and all that stuff. But also just that there are these great loves that last.
And no matter what you do, that they'll last. And that the moment when he first feels her, like doesn't see her but feels her, and his entire expression relaxes and he smiles, and it's like...
And it's tragic. It's terribly tragic, but it's also really, really beautiful.
And I have to say a big old thank you to Adam Arkin, who directed the episode.
Yes.
Who... That last shot, everybody initially thought we were going to have to do it with CGI. We weren't really sure if we were going to be able to shoot it. And that
gorgeous.
Wasn't really possible. And Adam and Herb Davis, who's our DP, who's phenomenal, figured out a way to stage this so that there was no funny business used.
Yeah, it was just one of the most beautiful going around the
orchestrated
two of them,
shot
orchestrated
ever.
Shots ever. It was just really beautiful.
With Denny
done.
In his space and her in her live space.
And I can watch that last little moment
it's
a million times.
Yeah, which is just so, just a little note too, that was,
Speak
I think,
left.
Something that we can watch over and over again. And if I had the patience, it would be my screensaver for a while. But
I also really like the moment
cry.
Where Christina says, you know, your brain works, say a word. And you wait this unbelievably long moment and then Meredith says, ouch. Which is also one of my... favorite moments, because it's so sweet and Christina's relief is so great.
And also for a woman who's not physically affectionate, that
she rubs her feet and she's got her hands in Meredith's face. I mean, she is not a toucher, and she's so clearly moved by the experience. It was really wonderful.
It's really great. So very cathartic.
And we leave Izzy and George in kind of a difficult place.
Yeah.
Which I think is...
And Callie.
Is going to be interesting.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely.
George is a guy who holds a grudge, as we all know, and have learned. And what I think is interesting about George and his inability to forgive people their transgressions is that he makes just as many mistakes. And we're going to start to see him make some, which is going to be a really interesting thing to see.
And Callie really squared off.
Callie threw down the gauntlet. If George has to choose, George will choose me.
That's pretty... them's fighting words, so it's going to be interesting to see if there's any fighting. Maybe there'll be another one of those scenes in the locker room where he's bashing each other up against... Exactly. So it'll be good. So lots to look forward to. I don't think that there are any cat fights technically in our upcoming episode.
We don't do cat fights, people.
No, we just...
This is not Dynasty. A fine show.
By the way, yes, very, very well respected, and some good hair pulling on that show, I think, but we don't do
some
quite as much hair pulling.
Some
yeah, I think
best.
Absolutely. And there's something wrong with a little hair pulling on a weekend or a weekday, I think, if it's in the right context.
We can't fight all the time.
We absolutely do. We low blows, sniping, all that kind of stuff. It's all good.
The other really great little moment was when Sydney tells Bailey that Bailey's going to give her a run for her money, and Sydney walks away, and Bailey says in that fabulous Bailey voice of hers, yeah, I am.
Yeah, I am.
And you know what's coming. It's going to be great.
Which is good, so.
We're going to take a little break from you guys in terms of the airing of shows. And
so we can make some.
So we can make some shows. Because let me tell you, we've been making shows on a fast and furious level for a while here.
But we have a great one coming up.
And we're going to take a little bit of a break and then come back, and some time will have passed. And I can't really tell you anything about it.
The characters will be in it.
Meredith's alive in it. I
Stuff
can tell
will
you that.
Happen.
Stuff
she and
will
Derek
happen.
Are still together.
And a couple of people show up who, someone shows up who you would be surprised to know is coming. And something happens in the last 30 seconds of the episode that if you miss it, you'll probably hurt yourself.
Do you remember we told you that about McSteamy in the shower, and some people probably didn't believe it. They went to bed, or they didn't bother to
TiVo it or whatever.
Or they returned their phone calls or went online or something. Okay, just trust us on this one.
In the Grey's Anatomy world of things happening, the Seattle Grey's world of things, this is probably the boldest thing we've ever done.
Pretty massive.
Yeah, one of the boldest things we've ever done. So, in terms of our characters, letting them do something.
So you just want to be there. You want to be there. You want to share it.
Share the love. Share the
love. Exactly. So hope you have a good couple of weeks off. Mm-hmm. I don't think we're taking any time off, but
no, we don't take time off.
But we don't believe in time off.
But we would like you to, and you can take some time to watch this episode again, Some Kind of Miracle, and freeze on the Denny Dillon manwich.
Yeah, keep that manwich in mind. And, you know, you got a little dock's tail in there. It wouldn't kill you.
A little bit of dock's tail.
Would not kill you. All right, well, we could babble, obviously, about this forever, because technically we just did.
Endlessly,
pretty much. So you might come back in a couple of weeks and we'll still be talking.
Yeah.
All right, so I think that's now time to button it up.
That's our cue to stop talking.
I'm Betsy Beers.
I'm Shonda Rhimes.
This is Grey's
Anatomy.
That's it for this podcast. We'll be back at the end of March with more insights and recaps, starting with the episode Scars and Souvenirs. Until then, you can always get your fill of the Denny Dillon manwich by replaying last night's episode at abc.com. Scars and Souvenirs airs Thursday, March 15th from 9 to 10 p.m. only on ABC.
This is for Mac McKinney. Mac, your chance has passed to play professional ball, but you can live vicariously through Vince Young's rookie year. You've obviously seen how he plays. Now see how he lives with AT&T Home Turf. Just go online to attblueroom.com/sports for exclusive access into your favorite athlete's worlds. See inside Vince's home and check out the AT&T technology that keeps him connected. So that's Mac's world. For everyone who's not Mac, if we can deliver his favorite quarterback to him, we've got what it takes to deliver your favorite athletes to you. The new AT&T. Your world delivered.